We'll call the meeting of the Energy Finance and Policy Division to order. First item on the agenda would be approval of the minutes from April 13th.
I'll move them, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hackbarth, thank you. Representative Hackbarth moves approval of the minutes from April 13th. Any additions, corrections, discussion? April 14th, sorry. Seeing none, all those in favor of their approval, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails, minutes are adopted. First bill on the agenda today is House File 3251, Representative Lilly.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. I'm going to sit in this chair today because I think the other one was bad luck.
Well, I don't know what that tells us for Mr. Cassidy, but... members will recall that we did lay this bill over earlier in the month in order to give Representative Lilly an opportunity to deal with some of the questions that members had about the bill. And I think that all of those issues have been resolved at this point. So the chair will move that House File 3251 be recommended to pass and return to the Committee on Finance. Representative Lilly, I believe you have an amendment.
Yes, sir, that's correct. Chair, I think the chair handed out the previous amendments and then included the new one, and I don't have the date. I have a copy. Is it the A3?
I think it's in the packets. It's the H3251A3 amendment. And I think the previous amendments that had been adopted are in the packets as well. So the chair will move adoption of the A3 amendment. Is there any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Mr. Chair, why don't we just at least have the author tell us what the amendment is? I believe I think that would be helpful for the audience at least.
Well, I intended to let him address that as part of the bill, Representative Western, but that's fine.
Okay.
Representative Lilly, if you want to describe the amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, I think this is one of those cases where actually having hearings and having input has been helpful. So I just want to thank you for the questions, and I think the bill has been approved or will be improved if you accept this amendment, and it'll provide clarity to perhaps a perceived problem. So I think the concern was that this would affect small shops, and we've dealt with that with this amendment, and I have Mr. Cassidy here to kind of go through it, and I think he could kind of explain in greater detail, really probably better than we did in our first meeting, what the bill's goal is, and then what the amendment does. And I don't know how much you want to hear, but I think Mr. Cassidy could offer some clarity.
Mr. Cassidy?
Thank you, Chairman Hilty. Representative Westrum, this the A3 amendment gets to the heart of...
Mr. Cassidy, you need to identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Paul Cassidy with Leonard Street and Dinard on behalf of Assurian. Representative Westrum, to your point, last week I think there were some concerns raised in committee over how this has impacted small retailers or small businesses. The intent of the bill really is to regulate and have registered probably between 5 and 8 wireless cell phone carriers that actually act as vendors and offer this insurance through their vendor relationships with their retail locations, whether that's a Radio Shack or a small retailer or even someone like a big retailer like Best Buy. to address the concerns over whether or not this would impact those small retailers, we've created a licensing exemption that if you have 10 retail locations or less, you would only pay a $100 registration fee. We don't think this, we don't believe this applies to small retailers. Most of those retailers that sell cell phone service or cell phones themselves have a vendor relationship with large wireless carriers. That's where the regulation is supposed to take place at that level. So, but in the event that someone fall under the purview of this regulation and they were a small retailer, there would be a licensing exemption where they would only pay $100 versus the $6,500 fee that's being proposed in the legislation.
So we do have the amendment before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion to the bill as amended? Representative Hackworth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to review the history of what we did with this bill, we had the bill before us. Then we have the A1 amendment and the A2 amendment in our packets here. We adopted the A1 and the A2 amendment previously. Is that correct? And now,
yes, sir.
The A3 amendment deletes that language back out. Is that what happened, or what? Maybe you can explain that. Maybe just kind of give us a little history of what we did here.
Chairman Hilty, Representative Hackbarth, the first two amendments were adopted last week in terms of raising the fee that was originally proposed in the bill from $5,000 to $6,500, I believe the other change on the A2 amendment was just a technical change. Requested by the department. So that's the shape the bill is in, I think, when the bill was laid over last week.
Representative Hackbar.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, but then it says in the A1 amendment, page 5, line 34, delete 1,000 and insert 6,500, but then on the A3 amendment, it says lines 33 and 34, insert this. Delete lines 33 and 34 and insert this. So we are eliminating some of that and just changing. I see. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got it now.
All right. Thank you. Further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, the chair will renew his motion that House File 3251 as amended be recommended to pass and return to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thanks for your patience, Representative Lilly, and your good work on dealing with these issues. Next bill on the agenda is Senate File 1537. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I believe there is an amendment in your packet that I'd like to...
There is, Representative Clark. The chair will move first that Senate File 1537 be recommended to pass and return to the Committee on Finance. And then the chair will additionally move that the S-1537 DE-1 amendment, and members, that has been distributed. There's a technical change to the amendment on line 3.15. The reference to section 216B, that should read 216C. Chair will incorporate that change into the amendment. And members, since this is a delete all amendment, that puts the bill in the form that the author prefers, it would... just move adoption of that amendment. Representative Westrum.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe the author or the author of the bill could tell us what her amendment is trying to do, and I think this one probably warrants discussion before we just put it on without knowing what it is exactly.
Well, Representative Westrum, I think typically the courtesy in committees is to allow the author of the bill to have the bill in the form that they want to have it discussed. If you want to discuss the delete all before we adopt it, I guess we can do that.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess we can throw it on. I don't think that it improves the bill necessarily from what I've first been able to glean, but maybe it does. I guess your preference, but it'd be nice to make sure we go through this in detail.
Well, Representative Westrum, I think it would be appropriate to discuss the bill in the form that the author wishes. So I think it would be appropriate to adopt the delete all at this time. There's no further discussion. All those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Clark, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. You will recognize that the bill before you, part of it was actually in this committee before and passed to the floor, and it had to do with requiring that a certificate of need be required for a proposed urban high voltage transmission line through the urban center in South Minneapolis. And what has happened is the Senate has passed that bill through the floor. The Senate has also passed another bill related to this that has to do with providing resources for a study to look at alternatives, which would include more energy conservation and use of renewable energy to meet the gap that this original proposed transmission line was trying to fulfill. And so what I have done here in this bill is to put the two together, the original bill that passed through this committee before that requires a certificate of need, and then to propose the language from the Senate with some modifications for the Neighborhood Energy Reduction Report, as it's called here. And let me just start by saying that this has been a very interesting process. That we've had many, many meetings with Xcel, the utilities that's proposing this high-voltage transmission line. And we've come to an agreement, and it's reflected in the amendments that you see before us here. And I think you'll be able to call on Xcel, and they will verify that we have come to a total agreement on this. And I think this really is actually a very wonderful opportunity for this committee, because what we're doing is, I think, being a model of what can happen when a community who's concerned about the proposal of a high-voltage transmission line in their neighborhood is able to meet and talk with the utility involved and come to an agreement. And we're hoping that we will be able to show that we can conserve and provide renewable energy that will actually meet the energy gap that we're talking about here and can avoid the transmission line. But if it does, if we can't, then we'll be going forward in the way that the certificate of need requires. So that's basically what the bill does in summary, Mr. Chair. I don't know if you need me to go through various details, but the amendment that we added today just changed the timeline, or clarified the timeline, I would say, that we both agreed upon, and some other comfort language that Xcel wanted.
Members, you recall we did have this bill before us earlier. The questions at this time, Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, I'd prefer if the author would go through the comfort language that she's talking about.
Sure.
Representative Clark.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, if you would check out the amendment that was offered today, it says that the instead of giving great detail about what can be requested from the utility for information to the project manager in the community, it just says that we will be utilizing the process that's already existing. We worked with our House Counsel, Ms. Bob Eliff, to reference the Minnesota Statutes 216B, which is a process that's already in place. And that made Xcel a little more comfortable to know that we were using that process, which is already in place. And we, instead of talking about 45 days after the process is clarified, we just put a precise date in there, which is before April 1, 2011. That made them more comfortable to know that there was an actual deadline date rather than a little more open way of describing it. So those are the two pieces of comfort language that Xcel wanted and that we agreed to. We just got them this morning. That's why you're getting them as an amendment here.
Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, is that an additional amendment we're adding now, or is that part of the one, the delete all?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, this was incorporated into my my amendment, and it was part of the full amendment. It's now part of the full amendment, but that's the comfort language that you were requesting information on.
Representative Westrom, there is an additional amendment that has been distributed but has not yet been acted on. That.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that you had included that.
It was not included in the delete all.
Mr. Chairman,
perhaps it would be appropriate to act on that at this time, since it is what Representative Clark has been referring to. And that's the A3 amendment, the S1537A3 amendment that is, I think members have in their packets. The chair would move adoption of that amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. That amendment is adopted. Representative Westrom, that is the language to which Representative Clark was referring. If there is no further discussion at this time, Director Glahn has asked to testify on the bill. And I presume that there's someone from Excel that we can hear from at some point as well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Western.
While he's coming, that was my question. Are we going to hear from Excel or any other testifiers?
Certainly we're going to hear from Director Glahn, and I presume Excel will be willing to testify if they choose.
Okay.
Director Glahn, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am Bill Glahn, Director of the Office of Energy Security, Deputy Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce, and I'll include my third title today because it has direct relevance to the language in the bill. I am the Acting Reliability Administrator for the state of Minnesota. So I apologize to the committee. I'm at a loss. I did not see the delete all amendment until this morning. I did not see the A3 amendment until seconds ago when I got it from your staff here. So it may be the case that some of my comments have been addressed by the A3 amendment, but I honestly, I was standing in the back of the room trying to read it and trying to piece it together with the DE1 amendment when I heard my name called. So I apologize for being a little disjointed in my comments.
Well,
here,
Director Glahn, under the circumstances, I think the agreement with Excel, insofar as it has been reached, was reached only very recently. We did not have these documents available earlier. I would point out that if this bill passes out of this committee, it's referred to finance, and while we typically do not take testimony or try to deal with bills in finance in any significant way, I think that would be an opportunity. I'd be happy to, since I do serve on the Finance Committee and would be introducing this bill, we'd be happy to make sure that you have the opportunity to actually digest this and bring any concerns to that committee.
Mr. Chair, I certainly do appreciate that offer, and I hope, but I may end up in the end taking you up on that offer. So, Mr. Chair, and again, I just want to point out for the benefit of the committee that although the author, and I guess we'll hear from Excel, have reached an agreement, the Commissioner of Commerce is tasked in this bill with administering both subdivision one, section one and section two. So, and we have not been consulted with any part of this bill, well, period. But I mean, we just weren't completely unfamiliar with the contents of Section 2 and Section 3 prior to this morning. So I would say that, you know, although maybe Excel has found comfort with this language, I would hope the committee understands that given our inability to participate in this process, that we do not share that comfort level. And I wanted to bring up, and again, I try to be respectful of the time of the committee and bring up as examples some of the things that concern me about the current language. And I certainly don't want to leave the impression that those are the only concerns I have with the language as it now reads. And I did bring up the section 216B versus 216.3. I appreciate, Mr. Chair, you offering that oral amendment to help us out, because there's no money in the 216B thing. So, I will not repeat my testimony on section 1. Section 1 is substantially similar to the form that we had before us some time ago, and you heard my concerns about that. I will not repeat those this morning. So I'll confine my comments to sections 2 and 3. As you recall, my concern with section 1 in part was adding that one-year delay to the process for the Hiawatha line. And what I'm concerned about with the way section 2 reads, notwithstanding the addition of this April 1 date from the A3 amendment, I think it introduces, in effect, a two-year delay to the process, because now we have ongoing, we are in day 4 of a 3-week hearing on the routing aspect of the Hiawatha line. And as I read this, the commission could not issue a route permit until the study has been conducted by this neighborhood group. And then that starts the clock. If I read this April 1 date, you know, if they don't get the report in, the April 1 date kicks in, if I'm reading that correctly, then that starts the certificate of need process, which will run approximately a year. And then at that point, we can go and resume the siting process, which is now underway. And and so I think, in effect, it's a two-year delay to the project, which gives me concern as the reliability administrator that we've now introduced substantial delay to a regulatory process that's well underway and includes a huge amount of participation from the public. I went to another 3-hour meeting that Representative Clark spoke at in the neighborhood last week or the week before. And you know, certainly every aspect of Section 2 has been or will be brought up in that current proceeding. So I see this introducing a two-year delay without adding any additional information into the record for the commission to consider, because we're already going through all this stuff in much, much detail. This morning, as we sit here, the hearing is underway in the small conference room at the PUC. So we have that aspect of it. And so I'm not sure that the study and the steering committee and all that is at the end of the day going to add any value to what we have as an existing process with the siting process that's currently underway. So again, so that's my overall concern about Section 2. I'm not going to take up the committee's time to go line by line through trying to improve the process or make it likely to produce more useful information for the commission, because I object to the concept from the get-go. So, and I would point out, Representative Westrom, I just signed a document today to move the process along in the Fargo to St. Cloud line. Representative Westrom has that line going through his district. I'm sure he would like to have a group like this work with his constituents. So, I'm a little concerned about the precedent we're setting here for transmission lines, and we already have task forces and advisory groups that include public input that help shape the process, and this community steering committee, and the study seems largely redundant for what we already have in place. And you know, if we do this for South Hiawatha, I can't make a principal argument that Representative Westrom's district doesn't deserve similar treatment, or Representative Beard, Representative Hoppe, or Representative Kalin, or any of the other. Oh, Representative Bly, actually, no, a different line goes through your district. I'm sure you would like to have this in your district as well. So I have a concern about...
I have the big one.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure there's a member who sits on this committee who wouldn't be impacted by one of the many lines that we're trying to get built after a 30-year hiatus in building such facilities. So Again, not going to go line by line through Section 2, but my concerns around Section 3, again, I hate to bring up the tawdry subject of COIN, but as the manager of the Energy Division of the Department of Commerce, I have some concerns about the funding mechanism we're used. I appreciate that our fiscal note was taken seriously and incorporated as an appropriation into this, but the way I read Section 3A, that we're transferring money. We're not giving us additional authority for the PUC and the department to conduct this additional litigation over the certificate of need, but we're transferring funds from the existing reliability administrator account to accomplish this. And I appreciate the research that's gone into whether the money is available, but perhaps what hasn't been before the committee before is the activities that I've undertaken as the acting reliability administrator to do more in this area. So whereas perhaps these monies haven't been fully utilized in the recent past, I have transferred, or I'm in the process, I guess I'm in the process of transferring Mariah White, who all of you know, to be a full-time staff person in the reliability administrator's office in order to facilitate her participation in the many task forces and working groups around the country impacting transmission in the Midwest and Minnesota in particular. I have another staff person who's working on some smart grid related initiatives, which we think will have reliability benefits for Minnesota. So I'm making greater use of the assessment authority under the reliability administrator statute. And I would caution that looking at backward-looking figures for what has historically been done may not give you an indication of the amount of funds available in that account for transfer for this purpose. So I did text my chief financial officer when I discovered this language this morning, and I have not heard back from him, and I assume he will not be available to answer detailed questions about the monies in that account or projections for future balances in that account. So I have that concern about just, do we have the money available to do the reliability administrator tasks that I have assigned to my staff above and beyond what has been done in the recent past from that account, and accommodate the litigation costs for this additional certificate of need process. And then maybe Excel will answer these questions when they come up to testify. But I got the strong impression from yesterday's discussion of Representative Rukavina's bill that after accounting for the $5 million per year of the solar rebate grants, that well's dry now, that we don't have six-figure sums to be appropriating from the RDF fund. But I could be wrong, because, again, as I pointed out yesterday, we don't administer that fund, so I would defer to Excel for information on account balances. And at the risk of having your committee administrator roll his eyes, if we are going to go and take seriously, just kidding, Annie, just kidding. If we are going to take Mr. Chair, if we are going to take seriously the administering the grant program for this neighborhood administration, there are going to be some administrative costs. Again, without rehashing the entire debate that I had with Representative Knuth in regard to Representative Beard's bill, we are at full capacity in my staff. So to do the grant processing and the due diligence that is required of Section 3, Subdivision C, I would have to have somebody do something other than what they're currently doing, whether it's stimulus grants or whatever. So they're would be an administrative cost, and the reason I brought up Mr. Pomeroy, we had a real brief discussion before the hearing started, whether we would be able to take from the $100,000 administrative cost that we may incur. I expect it's a nominal amount of money, but you know, I after our discussion the other day, I'm very cognizant about being very diligent about accounting for how we spend funds and making sure we are accounting properly for the expenditure of state resources.
And so, Director Glenn, as I mentioned earlier, we're certainly happy to give you the opportunity to digest this and run the numbers, and if further consideration has to be given to any of this, I'd be happy to take that up in finance.
Mr. Chair, again, thank you for that consideration, and those are my high-level concerns with the bill as it now stands, and staying out of the minutia and being respectful of the time, I'll leave it at that.
Questions? Representative Kalin?
Mr. Chair, I actually find myself in agreement with a lot of Director Glahn's points about the existing process and question how much we get out of the Section 2 and 3 at the cost and who pays for it, and how I'd actually like to save those questions for or ask whoever speaks for Xcel to address what would be unique about this process as opposed to the current process. Director Glahn and I, other stakeholders, had a very helpful conversation yesterday about how do we convene a larger conversation around these questions to look at a 21st century utility model that does go after the lowest cost resource, that through the certificate of need process and other means. I guess my question for Director Glahn is, the cost of this project is larger than when Representative Clark and I talked about it yesterday, but my question for you is what might the fate of this bill be, whether it's going to make it into law or whether there are other things that we should consider, because I like making things become law if we're going to be helping people and solving a problem.
Director Glahn?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, I guess inferring from your question, I have not discussed this bill with the governor or had any indication of his feelings about it, so I couldn't answer what seems to be your implied question. But I will share with the committee that we had pushback from MNB on three separate occasions about the figure we put in here for the litigation costs for our agency. So they were, but I can tell you the current proceeding on the site permit, the routing permit, has 14 parties participating, all represented by council, which is, and this dollar amount we put in, is my understanding, is less than the litigation cost that my office and the PUC incurred for the CapEx 2020 certificate of need. You would hope that this would be less because it's 1.25 miles, not several hundred miles. But with 14 parties and the number of and the report and the number of issues that are likely to be raised, I believe, and I can provide the committee more documentation, believe it's a well thought through and well documented assumption.
Representative Beard?
Mr. Chair, I have just a couple comments and then maybe one question for Representative Clark. First of all, I've gotten some pushback from some of my friends saying, how come you're always shilling for Xcel Energy? Is that your bill? Do you pay Xcel Energy for your electric? I'm just here to tell you, members, no, I don't. I'm actually part of a municipal that provides the power in City Shakopee. Most of the district I represent actually is supplied by the Minnesota Valley Electric Cooperative, including our friends at the Midwakaden Nation. However, Xcel does have a little sliver of service territory that runs along the railroad tracks across from Valley Fair. And so I've got to tell you, I do have an interest in this regard, in that they are very successful, large, historied companies that have existed in the Minnesota Valley, some of them for over 130 years. Xcel supplies that baseload power to those folks. And they're the ones that every time we whack Xcel with another project, another cost, I don't pay it personally directly. But the people that employ hundreds and hundreds of people up and down that valley do. The glass plant, the box plant, an industrial rubber plant, three or four printing companies, one of which I referenced on the floor the other day. And they're seeing their rates just do little ratchet creeps here and there and everywhere else because of things that we do around here, things like this. So when I express anger or angst about what we're doing here, it's just a little here, a little there, but pretty soon somebody that's buying a couple megawatts a week to make glass bottles gets a real hit, and pretty soon their profit margins are thinner yet, and they lay people off, or they don't hire, or they don't invest in the newest machinery because they don't have the margins to pay for it. This is why this concerns me a great deal. This does touch the job base that we're all professing to be such a panic about right now. These are real jobs that have been there for a century, some of them, and we continue to assault them a little bit at a time. And Representative Clark, in your district, I believe there are two huge employers, one of which I've benefited from very directly, and that would be Abbott Northwestern Hospital and the Wells Fargo facility that handles mortgages all across the United States. They depend on reliable, inexpensive power. Reliable is a key word here. And there are thousands of people that work at those two places. Now, it's Representative Clark's district. If she doesn't want power there, I suppose that's her deal. And her voters can respond to that in November. But there are people there, like Wells Fargo and like Abbott Northwestern, where folks from my district drive down there to actually go to work, or they have their products serviced. Or in my case, I laid in the operating room having my heart worked on for 7 hours one day, and you know, I didn't have to check to see if the sun was shining or if the wind was blowing or if somebody else in your district, Representative Clark, was going to turn off a big machine so that the operating room could operate consistently and with quality for 7 whole hours while they putzed around with my ticker. I'm glad that the electric was there to make it work. But I guess what I really want to know is, what's the end game here with your bill? We already have a process that we've set in play that takes into consideration public input from people that we task under penalty of law with making the lights stay on, the traffic signals work, and, oh, by the way, Abbott Northwestern Hospital to stay in business and functioning. Now, I understand, and I'm going to ask Xcel this in just a moment, they have agreed voluntarily to go through the certificate of need process, which they don't even need to do. But I'm sure they're going to soak some money for my glass plant and my malt plant and a couple of my grain processing facilities to help pay for this. I see you want to move it out that they can't even start the process until April of 2011. Are you really looking for a community warm, fuzzy feeling, or are you trying to stop the line and make it not be built at all? That's my question of you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm very glad that your ticker is working, too. That's,
Thank you.
We share that in common. Let me just say, I don't take lightly anything about the issues of our hospital having adequate power. Mm-hmm. And I would only be bringing this bill if I were sure that we were looking at that as well as all the rest of it. What we did with this bill, and what you voted on, maybe you voted against it, but the rest of the committee, majority of the committee, voted to pass on the certificate of need. Mm-hmm. And we're really happy about that, because without that, we would not be answering the questions that we are asking here to be answered. Is there a real need for this? And if so, how can it be met? What are the ways to meet it? We're not just about stopping a power line, although we're very concerned about what has been proposed. High voltage power transmission lines through an inner city neighborhood that will interfere with all kinds of things, including development, mm-hmm. possible health risks. A very dense population. This hasn't been done since the 1950s in Minneapolis. Why in the world are they choosing to do this now when there are some alternatives? Our question is, can there be alternative ways to provide that gap in power? And we think there can, and we think we'll have the cooperations of places like Alina Hospitals and others when we can bring to them a plan that says, okay, we are in our neighborhood going to look at two things. We're going to look at conservation and efficiency. And secondly, we're going to look at renewable energy resources that you as an institution, mm-hmm. And we've had some indication that some of those big players are interested in having opportunities to do some renewable energy development. We've got roofs that can have solar, and we're not just worried about when the sun shines, because there are all kinds of ways to store power, to do distributed generation. There are a lot of different things that are out there now that are being discovered, and it's been a real pleasure to work with Xcel on discussing them and to work with people in the community on discussing them. And so I think what you need to understand is this is not to stop power. We like to have our own power in our neighborhood, but we're also very interested in trying to make sure that we're doing our contribution to energy efficiency and conservation, which we are not. We have leaky houses. We have a lot of problems that waste a lot of energy. So we're trying to do that, and we're trying to look at the opportunities for renewable energy. I hope that answered your question.
Members, our time is growing short, and before we run out of time, I think it would be appropriate to hear from Xcel.
While they're coming, can I just make one more comment, Mr. Chair?
Representative Beard.
I know you're offering Deputy Director Glahn the opportunity to come to finance. Some of us don't sit on the finance committee, me, for instance, and I haven't had a chance to hear this version of the bill be vetted, and I think many of us haven't. So I appreciate the time we're taking here to give some dwell time and some thoughtful discussion to what's happening. I suppose I could come to the Finance Committee if Representative Carlson would let me ask 101 questions here. I doubt it. but some of us will have opportunity that some of us won't. So I'm grateful for the chance to talk about it here today.
Mr. Evans.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. I'd like to start to just briefly put a little context around this story, because at the beginning, this is a success story. The area that we're talking about serving here along Lake Street and the Uptown area around Chicago Avenue and Lake Street along the Greenway is a genuine success story. The Abbott Northwestern Hospital, the Alina headquarters, the new Sheraton Hotel, the Wells Fargo Mortgage, a bunch of small businesses along the Greenway and along Lake Street and in the Uptown area, and a lot of new high-density residential in this area have all been part of the plan. They've been part of what I think public policymakers have desired, and it's what has happened. But what comes with that when you have that much development in that area and that much particular energy load is we've got to get energy to them, to serve them. And the increase in electric power demands in this particular area, while over our entire service territory during the recession and the cool winter or the cool summer last year, our load has gone down. In this area, our load has been increasing, and it's because of the economic success of this area. The transmission line that we've proposed is directly related to serving that need. It's directly related to providing the energy that those businesses are using. We've had, if you talk to Senator Dibble, for example, you will find, and talk to some of our customers there, we've had growing concerns in the area about outages, about extended outages, and about the frequency of outages. And some businesses, particularly those that use a lot of electronic equipment, even a grocery store with electronic cash registers, even if there's not an outage, if there's a voltage fluctuation, which is what happens when the transmission is inadequate, their electronic equipment just shuts down to protect itself. And so there are disruptions that are happening, starting to happen in that area, and that's exactly what we are trying to do in building this line. And there's a selfish motive as well, because we're fined, we're subject to fines at any rate, if we don't provide, if we have too frequent outages and if we have too long outages in areas that we are obligated to serve. So that's what this line is all about. Now, because the line is only a mile and a quarter long, it's a very short line. Under current Minnesota law, we are not required to get a certificate of need. And that created a problem in this particular case, because as Representative Clark has pointed out, this is a very dense area. We've not built transmission through this area in the past. And I think that there's at least a legitimate argument, a legitimate public policy question, whether or not, in spite of the shortness of the line, it would be appropriate to do a certificate of need to assure the neighbors, to assure the residents, to assure the state that the line is needed. Our concerns and the comfort language that Representative Clark talked about is simply our way of making sure that we can do the certificate of need, which we are willing to do, to demonstrate the need for the line, and we can do it in a way that does not cause delays and unnecessary expense. Now, I'll be interested to talk to Director Glahn, and he may have some points that we've missed, but we are satisfied with that with these amendments, we're going to be able to do the certificate of need and do the routing and siting and have the line, if it's determined that it's needed, have the line up and running in time to meet the needs that our customers are experiencing there. So we support doing the certificate of need and providing that comfort to the state of Minnesota, to the city of Minneapolis, to the residents of the neighborhood, that the line is indeed needed. If in that process they can demonstrate that the line isn't needed, then that's what the Public Utilities Commission is for, and we will abide by the Public Utilities Commission decision. The other part of this is the need of the community, or the desire of the community, to do a conservation study in the area. We've just in the last 2 days talked about all of the ways that the Renewable Development Fund has been tapped over the years to provide for the needs of individual communities, individual areas, individual industries, whether it's the wind industry or the solar industry or the iron range, and using this fund to help those communities do something that they want to do that's innovative, that's different, and that helps their area. So we have always been agnostic on how you all want to use the Renewable Development Fund. We've never gotten up and taken positions on using it this way or that way. That's a public policy decision. But we think this is a good use of the money. We think that even if it has no impact on the line, it will help the neighborhood to learn about conservation measures that they can do in their neighborhood and they can improve the situation. And so for that reason, the use of the Renewable Development Fund for this purpose, of course, is up to you. But from our point of view, it seems like a useful purpose with the money. the money's being collected and it's sitting there. So if it wasn't used for this, it would be used for something else. Those might be worthwhile uses as well, but this is the one we've got in front of us. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Evans, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Evans, testimony in the last week or so, different bills talking about the RDF and the funds and what Mr. Glahn referenced. is the RDF plush with enough funds to meet the requirements of the bill?
Mr. Evans?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the RDF is definitely not flush, but the need here, as I understand it, is $100,000, and it has that. I think I testified the other day on Representative Rukavina's bill. The Renewable Development Board was looking forward to about a $15 million grant cycle next year. And with the Rukavina bill, that will take not all, but a significant amount of that money. And probably make a further grant cycle impossible. Thanks to Representative Hilty and this committee, we're going to have about $1.5 million more in the fund starting in 2013. And so that still won't make the fund flush, but it will have some more money. But in answer to your question, yes, there is $100,000 in the fund that would be available to fund this study.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Evans, as was referenced, for the earlier comments, will the rates have to go up in as we see the RDF, and we're looking, 3 years down the line before you're going to get a replenishment of a $1.3 million or whatever it is that you're going to talk about? Are the rates going to have to go up for the ratepayers to continue to keep that at a you must have some kind of level where you keep that fund at a point where you say, well, I can't do this anymore.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, under current law, we pay $16 million per year into the fund for having casks at Prairie Island. And we pay $350,000 per year per cask for the casks that we have at Monticello. If the amendment to the bill, the Rukavina bill that was passed in this committee a couple of days ago, goes through, that $16 million will change, and it will become $500,000 per cask per year. So starting in, I think I said, 2013, not only will the fund continue to, our contribution to the fund continue to go up as a result of added casks at Monticello, it will also then start going up as a result of added casks at Prairie Island. So just to conclude the point, we don't voluntarily put money in the RDF fund. We put money in the RDF fund that statute requires us to put in.
Members, once again, we're at a point where I think both DFL and the Republican caucuses are scheduled to meet at 11:30, and we're past that. Are there any other compelling questions? Representative Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think we should just move to a vote. I first would like to offer an amendment to just delete part of this bill. I think that would help a lot. Otherwise, we're ready to vote on the final bill if that doesn't pass. Mr. Chair, I would first move to delete Section 2 and 3, B, and C, and ask for a roll call.
That motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll. Chair votes no.
Falk?
No.
Westrom?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Atkins?
No.
Beard?
Aye.
Why?
No.
Reinert?
No.
Gunther?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hoppy?
Aye.
Portman? Johnson? Halen?
Yeah. Or no, excuse me.
You're right.
Knuth? Kulik Jackson?
No.
Magnus? Nornis?
Yes.
Obermueller?
Aye.
Purcell?
No.
Sailor?
No.
Seifert?
Yes.
Welting?
There being nine ayes and nine nays, the motion does not prevail.
Mr. Chair, I just ask for a roll call on the final vote.
Is there any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, a roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll. Chair votes aye.
Falk?
Yes.
Westrom?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Atkins?
Aye.
Beard?
No.
Fly?
Aye.
Reinert?
Aye.
Gunther?
No.
Hackbarth?
No.
Poppy?
No.
Portman? Johnson? Kalin?
Aye.
Knuth? Kulik Jackson?
Aye.
Magnus? Nornis?
No.
Obermueller?
Aye.
Purcell?
Aye.
Sailor?
Aye.
Seifert?
No.
Welty?
There being 10 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is passed as amended.
Mr. Chair.
To the Committee on Finance.
Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
If you could advise your leadership, this bill, I think, could take significant time on the floor. So just so we... They know that going into the time limits.
Thank you, Representative Westrom. Hopefully you'll have that discussion in the Rules Committee.
Try there as well.
Members, we will be meeting next week to discuss the Kalin bill and other business that may come before us. Please stay tuned for announcements from Mr. Pomeroy, and with that, the meeting is adjourned.